So this morning we are going to jump right in with an opportunity for active participation. I would like you to raise your hand, please, if you have ever heard of something called the Enneagram. It's a word that comes from two Greek words, ennea, meaning nine, and gramos, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, which means a written symbol. Because the Enneagram is a personality assessment system that's based on nine personality types. And it's represented by the written symbol that you see on the screen. Like other personality tools, like Myers-Briggs, for example, which I suspect many, if not all of you, have heard about, the Enneagram helps its users to know themselves better. What makes it different from something like Myers-Briggs and other personality tools is that it helps people understand and explore what motivates them. It's not just looking at your external behaviors, but it looks at what motivates you on a pretty deep level. The Enneagram helps you pay attention to your patterns of thinking and feeling and behaving, and then understand how those patterns have developed from a particular deep internal motivation that we usually are completely unaware of. And then once you have some understanding of that motivation and how it developed in the early stages of your life, you can look both at how it has served you well over the course of your life and how it has limited you in some ways. Now, for the most part, as we're thinking and feeling and interacting, we don't intentionally behave in ways that make us smaller, that decrease our ability to experience life, that limit our capacity to give and receive love. But we do that. We do it pretty consistently, in fact. And for the most part, as I said, we're completely unaware of the fact that we're doing that. The Enneagram is a tool that can help us see the ways that we do that so that we can begin to do things differently. I first heard of the Enneagram many years ago, 20 years ago. And to be honest, it sounded a little new agey to me, a little bit weird. And so I didn't do anything more with it at that time. I heard about it again a couple of years ago from Drew Henry, who, as you know, some of you know, is a pastor in Albuquerque, Presbyterian pastor. Drew has done quite a bit of work himself with the Enneagram and has found it very useful in his own growth and development, and he began talking to me about it. I also had the chance to learn about it at the recent leadership retreat that I attended. In fact, we spent, of the 4 days that we were there, 4.5, we spent one full day exploring and experiencing the Enneagram, and I've continued to look into it myself since then. This morning, I want to share a little bit of my experience with it with you. So according to the Enneagram system, we humans have three centers of intelligence, three brains, if you will, the head center, the heart center, and the body center. And each of those three centers is divided into three personality types. So as I mentioned earlier, there are nine primary types, and they are appropriately numbered 1 through 9. Each of the nine types is characterized, among other things, by a primary motivation, which reveals itself in amazingly consistent patterns, ways of thinking and feeling and relating to ourselves and other people. In fact, a very common experience, surprisingly common experience, when someone is first learning about it and hears descriptions of the nine types, when they hear the one that ends up being their type, so many people think, oh my gosh, how did they get in my head? How were they able to so perfectly describe what I've been thinking and feeling my whole life? Because each of us has parts of all of the nine types within us, but we find our home base within just one of the nine types. It's the place where we resonate the most deeply with those patterns. So with all of that as a little bit of background, there's one particular facet that I want to lift up this morning. And that is the capacity that I mentioned a little bit ago, the capacity that the Enneagram has to show us how we have been limited in our experience of life. It's particularly useful in helping us see what is sometimes called our shadow side, the parts of ourselves that we don't usually want to acknowledge, and in fact, are often completely unaware of, at least on a conscious level. For the most part, we humans tend to be much more conscious and aware of our good intentions and our admirable traits and the positive aspects of our personalities. And while the Enneagram acknowledges those parts of us, it also helps us to see what you might think of as the underbelly of those things, the shadow sides, because we all have them. We don't all acknowledge them. But the more freely that we can see and acknowledge these shadow sides of ourselves, the more free we can be from them. So I'm going to give you an example. I have determined of the 9 basic types on the Enneagram, I am a number 2. I want to share with you some of the characteristic patterns of the type 2s. 2s excel at making connections and empathizing with the needs and feelings of others. Focused on relationships, they are good at supporting others. I'll take that. 2s are caring, helpful, generous, and exuberant. You don't have to agree or disagree. This is my own self-assessment. 2's particular superpower is that they can be excellent friends and will often go to great lengths to take care of and support loved ones. That's all pretty, there's more, of course, but that's all pretty delightful, right? Who wouldn't want to be a 2 on the Enneagram? Who else can I tell that I am a 2 on the Enneagram? I'm pretty proud to claim all of that, but there's more. Listen to some of the other characteristic patterns of the type 2. 2s want to be accepted and liked by others and will adapt or change to earn this approval. 2s repress personal needs and feelings to avoid being needy and to maintain a helpful self-image. In seeking approval, 2s can miss authentic connection in relationships due to their tendency to shape-shift by being overly nice, superficially friendly, and flattering. And because it's difficult for 2s to ask directly for what they need, they seduce others as a way of getting what they need through the indirect routes of charm and apparent generosity. That's not so delightful. And there's more, but I think that's enough to give you a sense of what some of the shadow sides are of that other seemingly wonderful stuff. And those parts, the shadow parts, are the parts that we tend not to see. The parts that tend to be outside of our awareness. We can think of them as our blind spots, right? When you're driving and you're about to pass and you look, hopefully, look over your shoulder and think, oh my gosh, there's a car right there. We have blind spots. We have blind spots about ourselves and our personalities. So when Drew and I were first talking about the Enneagram a couple of years ago, he suggested that I might possibly be a type 2. And he asked me, have you ever considered yourself to be controlling or manipulative? And I was horrified. And I said, what? No, I am not controlling or manipulative. And I thought, I am kind and loving and supportive and helpful. I'm not controlling or manipulative. And I think, I don't really remember, but I think he may have responded with something like, Eventually, I began to see that at least some of my efforts to be kind and helpful and supportive and encouraging, in fact, came from a deep need within me to be liked. And that at least some of my efforts to be kind and supportive and helpful and encouraging came from a deep need for people to think well of me. And that at least some of my efforts, therefore, to be kind and loving and supportive and helpful were in fact disguised attempts to influence how other people felt about me. Disguised attempts to affect the outcome of a situation. And I was horrified to realize then that some of my efforts to be kind and helpful and loving and supportive and encouraging were, in fact, disguised attempts to control and manipulate. That was a pretty painful realization. But it was a helpful one, because once you see something about yourself like that, you can't unsee it. And not only can you not unsee it, but then you can choose to start doing something about it. You can learn where it comes from and how it developed. You can acknowledge how it has worked for you in many ways in your life so far, how it has served to protect you from being hurt. And if you're willing, with great kindness toward yourself, ideally, and patience and support, you can learn different ways, healthier ways of thinking and feeling and interacting both toward yourself and toward other people. And then with that growing understanding of yourself and an increasing awareness, you keep paying attention to your patterns of thinking and feeling and interacting, you can move toward becoming a fuller and more complete version of yourself. Not anybody else, but who God made you to be. But first, you have to see. You have to see yourself. You have to be aware of what have been your blind spots with honesty and with courage. And the Enneagram is one tool. It's a powerful tool, but it's one tool that can help us do that. So as I seem to be saying, finding myself saying more and more in my sermons, what does any of this have to do with our scriptures for today? I actually think there's a significant connection. In today's gospel passage, Jesus told two stories, one about a lost sheep and one about a lost coin. In each story, the owner of the lost item searched and searched and searched until they found it. And finding it, they called their friends and neighbors together to celebrate. Now, it seems clear, obvious, that in our stories, the shepherd and the woman represent God. They're talked about, Jesus says, the angels of God, but I think God never gives up, as Joyce was saying, continues to search, continues to look for all of us, and then rejoices when each time a sinner repents, as Jesus said, each time someone who had been lost is found, each time someone turns away from sin and turns back to God, each time someone is restored from their lostness and comes home to God. But here's the thing, in both stories, the lost items didn't know they were lost. The coin, obviously, had no awareness of being lost. And the sheep, well, I'm going to suppose that the sheep didn't know it was lost either. I think if it had, it would have been bleeding frantically and making noise, and the shepherd would have found it, and there wouldn't have been much of a story. But so I think the sheep must not have realized, this particular sheep, that it was lost. I'm going to imagine that it had just sort of carelessly wandered off, grazing with its head down, following its own path, while the rest of the flock had gone off in another direction. And that one sheep just kept doing what it was doing, kept going in the way it was going, not scared, not worried, not concerned about being found, because it didn't realize it was lost. But regardless of whether they knew it or not, both the sheep and the coin were lost. Okay, now I sort of gave a hint of this a minute ago, but imagine how much more quickly they both would have been found if they had known they were lost. If they somehow could have communicated to their owners, hey, I'm over here. I know I'm lost, but I don't know how to get back to where I belong. I need your help. They would have been found. They would have been restored to their owners and brought back to where they belong so much more quickly and easily. And so here's the connection in my mind to everything I said about the Enneagram. We're all lost in some way. And what I mean by that is that none of us is experiencing life as fully as God intends it to be experienced. None of us is using our full capacity to live, to give and receive love. None of us is living in full communion with God or even with our true selves. All of us are limited in some way by the ways that we think and feel and interact with ourselves and others. I think sometimes we have a sense of that, but I think generally we don't really know why, other than the fact that we're human. Because despite our best efforts and intentions, we continue to not experience life as fully and abundantly as it's intended to be lived. Maybe some of us, once in a while, are fully aware that we're lost and have some awareness to shout out to God, "Hey, I'm over here. I'm lost and I don't know how to get back by myself. I need your help." But most of us, I think, most of the time, are like the coin and the sheep and don't even really know that we're lost or the degree to which we're lost. And when we can't see that we're lost, it's less likely that we'll recognize our need to be found. As long as we're unable or unwilling to recognize our lostness, we'll resist being brought back to where we belong, brought back to our true home, which is in the full presence of God as our full selves. And so, yes, the Enneagram is one tool that can help us to see our lostness. I have a quote that you will all recognize. "I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see." The key is to be willing to see our lostness and then to be willing to be found. Amen.